Okay. So again, so the Aaron arrives in Beit Shemesh. The people in Beit Shemesh are harvesting the wheat, as we mentioned. They look up, they see, they're overjoyed. They're so happy to see the Aaron. And again, Rashi and the Radak say either they sinned here, either because they were so happy that they didn't have the proper honor and respect for the Aaron. And maybe they acted with Kalus Rosh, they didn't act with the proper respect towards the Aaron. The Radak said maybe because of their joy, they actually looked inside the Aron, which was a no-no. You're not allowed to, even the Kohanim and the Levim had to be very careful. Certainly, regular people could not just open the Aron and look inside. So therefore, that was a big no-no, and perhaps that's why they were punished. Okay. So the Pasuk says, Pasuk Yudalid, V'ha'agola, and I think this is what we ended off with last week. V'ha'agola ba'el se'ei Yehoshua be'beis HaShimshi. So the wagon stopped in the field of Yehoshua from Beit Shemesh, Yehoshua Beis HaShimshi. Atamot Sham, the wagon stopped there. V'sham Evan Gedola, there was a large stone in his field. V'yivaku Ha'agala He'alu Ola Hashem. They took the wagon and they chopped it up, and they used it as firewood for a mizbeach. And they took the cows and they sacrificed them as korbanos to Hashem. Simple understanding here, the Pashup shot is that the people of Beit Shemesh did this, right? They were so happy, they were so thankful to Hashem that they brought korbanos as a sign of thanksgiving to Hashem. How were they allowed to do this? Normally, we say you can't only bring korbanos in the Beis HaMikdash or in the Mishkan. So how can you bring korbanos here? So the Radak points out that after Shiloh was kind of dismantled, because Shiloh, of course, was the place of the Mishkan. But after Shiloh was dismantled because the Aron was gone, so what was there? The Mishkan was kind of not effective at that point. So therefore, bamos were once again allowed. Bamos are private mizbeachs, and private altars were once again allowed at that point, and that's what they did. According to the Medrash, the Bnei Yisrael, the people of Beit Shemesh, were not the ones who brought the korbanos, but rather the Plishtim. Right, the officers of the Plishtim themselves brought the Karbanos here. That's according to the Medrash, that even the Plishtim recognized the greatness here after this unmanned wagon, with just these cows, made it all the way to Beit Shemesh. They realized that this was all divine. They realized that God was behind all of this, and therefore they themselves brought the sacrifices to Hashem. But again, that's according to the Medrash. Okay,
Did they
Pasuk
think
Tes Vav.
maybe the cows were used with some avodah zarah or anything, by the Plishtim or?
No. These were brand new cows. It says they were never worked, and they certainly were never worshipped. Yeah. Okay. Pasuk Tes Vav. V'ha'levi'im horidu es aron Hashem. So the Levi'im were the ones who took down the aron from from this wagon. V'yes ha'argas asher ito, and they also took the box, if you remember. The golden images that were created by the Plishtim, the golden mice and the golden hemorrhoids and things like that, were placed in this box that was right next to the Aron. So the Levim took that box down as well. Asher bo klei zahav, which had these golden images inside. Vayasimu el ha'even ha'gedola, and they placed them on this big stone, right, the big stone that was referred to in the previous pasuk that was in the field of Yehoshua Beis HaShimshi. They placed the Aron and this box on this large stone. And the people of Beit Shemesh brought additional korbanos to Hashem. So that's what it says. If you understand the previous pasuk, like the Pashup Shad, that the people of Beit Shemesh brought korbanos, so now this pasuk is saying that they brought additional korbanos, right? Meaning they sacrificed those two cows. Those two cows were the ones that brought the Aron to Beit Shemesh. So they sacrificed the two cows. And now Pasuk Tes Vav is saying that they brought additional korbanos. In addition to those two cows, they brought other korbanos as well. If you understand, like the Medrash, that says that the Pasuk Yudalid means that the Plishtim, the officers of the Plishtim, brought korbanos. So then what Pasuk Tes Vav is saying is that in addition to the officers of the Plishtim bringing korbanos, the Bnei Yisrael, the Jews of Beit Shemesh, also brought korbanos. So either way, the people of Beit Shemesh brought korbanos as a thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Pasuk Tes Zayin, V'chamisha Sarnei Plishtim Ra'u, V'yashuvu Ekron V'yom Hahu. Now the five officers, the five governors or mayors of the Plishtim, so they saw this whole episode. Right? Remember, they were following the wagon with the Aron to see what would happen. They saw that it reached its destination successfully without any guidance, without any, you know, no one driving the wagon. And therefore, they turned and returned to Ekron, which was this big Plishti city on that day. The Mitzudas David says that here, when it says Ra'u, that they saw, it doesn't just mean that they saw what happened, but it means that they recognized that this was from God. They recognized that this was divine, that everything was from Hashem. And there are times that we find even in Tanakh that Vayar, you know, means that the person recognized they had some sort of understanding that went beyond the simple understanding. And then finally the Sarnei Plishtim understood what was going on, that everything was from the Ribbono Shel Olam. Pasuk Yud-Zayin.
Rabbi, just a question. It said that the Levites were Kohanim. I don't understand that. Were they Levites or were they Kohanim?
So that's interesting. It says the Leviim. What do you see in the Me'am Loes you're looking at? Yes, Rabbi.
It says that the Levites who carried the ark were Kohanim priests, the descendants of Aharon, who were from the tribe of Levi.
Yeah. So, I mean, according to that, it's calling them Leviim because they're from Shevet Levi. Right, that's why it's calling them Levim, because they're from Shevet Levi, from the tribe of Levi. I assume that when it said Levim, it meant Levim literally, because we find in the desert that the ones who carried the Aron were the Levim. The Levim were the ones that carried all the Kalim in the desert. So that's what I assumed when I saw the Halavim there, that's what it meant. I didn't see any of the Mepharshim say otherwise, but I guess there are some Mepharshim that understand that it was the Kohanim, and it's calling them the Levim because they're from Shevet Levi. That must be the understanding.
Okay.
Pasuk Yudzayin. Ve'ele techorei hazov asher heshivu plishtim asham la'ashem la'ashnod. So these sarnei plishtim, the mayors and the governors, the leaders of the plishtim. So they brought these. Right, we talked about the golden images, right? So these golden mice and the golden the golden hemorrhoids or whatever it was. So these golden things, Asher Heshivu Plishtim Hashem LaHashem, that they made, they offered these things, they created them, they crafted them, and they offered them to Hashem as an atonement, as like a sin offering. La Ashdod Echad, La Aza Echad, La Ashkelon Echad, La Gas Echad, La Ekron Echad. So here the pasuk says that they made exactly five. They made exactly five, and one corresponding to every Plishti city. These were the main five Plishti cities. There were other smaller Plishti cities that we'll talk about in a moment, but these were the main five Plishti cities. And this was exactly the way that the sorcerers, if you remember the Pesukim from last week, the sorcerers and the priests suggested to them, make one corresponding to each of the Plishti cities. That's what they did, corresponding to each of these big cities. Pasuk Yud Ches, the Achberei Hazahav Mispar Kol Orei Plishtim, L'chameshes ha'seronim. Now the mice, these golden mice, so the number of mice corresponded to the cities of the Plishtim that belonged to the five mayors. Now I'm translating this a little bit ambiguously. You'll see why in a moment. Me'ir mivtzar v'ad kofer aprazi. All of the cities, it's according to many of the Mepharshim, Mitzudas David, and the Malbim, and things like this. So according to those Mepharshim, what the Pasuk is saying here is that the Techorim, right, the golden hemorrhoids, they made only five, corresponding to the five major cities and the five governors. But when it came to the golden mice, so then they made more of them. They didn't just make five of them. They made more of them corresponding to every Plishti city, right? Because again, there were five major cities, and then there were a lot of little cities, you know, suburbs or whatever, you know, towns, neighboring towns. So there were a lot of little cities. So they made many golden mice corresponding to all of the minor cities. Okay. And the Pasuk says, Me'ir mivtzar v'ad kofer aprazi, all types of cities, whether they were fortified cities, you know, walled cities, whether they were open cities, the Ad Avel HaGedola, all the way until Avel HaGedola. Avel HaGedola, the Mefarshim say, refers to this rock, right? This place right near Beit Shemesh, this rock, that's what Avel HaGedola is, and we'll see why it's called Avel in a minute. Asher Hinichu Aleha Es Aron Hashem, this big rock that they placed upon it, the Aron of Hashem, Ad HaYom HaZeh, B'Stei Yehoshua Beis HaShimshi, and apparently this large stone is still in the field of Yehoshua Beis HaShimshi. Until today, this large stone is present in that place. Now, so they made many of these things. Now, again, keep in mind that the Plishtim all suffered from these diseases, right? So, these diseases with the mice attacked them, or the mice attacked their grain. So this wasn't just the big cities, but it was all the Plishtim. So maybe that's why they made more of the golden mice to symbolize the fact that they all suffered at the hands of these mice. They all suffered these illnesses, or they all suffered the loss of their crops. The Alshich says also that even though they were not allowed to look in the Aron, and remember, according to the Radak, that was the sin here. The people of Beit Shemesh looked into the Aron, but of course, these images are not holy images. These images they can make, and they can look as many as they want. Okay, now all of a sudden, it almost sounds like out of the blue comes a pasuk that all of a sudden Hashem decides to punish the people of Beit Shemesh. Pasuk Yotes. Vayach ve'anshei Beit Shemesh. All of a sudden Hashem decides to kill people in Beit Shemesh. Ki ra'u ba'aron Hashem. Because they saw the Aron of Hashem. Right? They saw the Aron of Hashem. So again, according to the Radak, Pashup Shat is that they looked into the Aron. They opened up the Aron and they looked into it. And that was wrong. They shouldn't have done that. The Aron is so holy, is so kadosh, that they shouldn't have done that. But that's what they did.
Okay. Where do you see that? Where in a pasuk do you see they took the golden mice, they took the other stuff, but where does it say they looked into it?
It doesn't say explicitly, but if you look back at pasuk Yud,
Oh, pasuk right. Yud Gimel. So pasuk Gimel. It uses the base.
For instance, okay, we'll talk about that. Right. So in pasuk Yud Gimel, it says that they were doing the ktsir, right? They were cutting the wheat. Vayisu es einehem vayiru es ha'aro. So it sounds like that they looked at the aro. That's what it sounds like. But the Malbim, what Harry's pointing out is what the Malbim says, that ki ra'u ba'aron, right? That it's the bays. Actually, the Malbim doesn't say exactly like that, but maybe ra'u ba'aron implies that they looked inside the aron, right? One would think that maybe that's the pshat. We'll see a couple of other understandings also here. You know what the sin was. Vayach ba'am, and Hashem kills among the people of Beit Shemesh, among this nation, Shivim Ish, Chamishim Elef Ish. Now, this is a strange formulation here, but it sounds like 70 men and then 50,000 men. So we'll have to see exactly what that means. Vayis'ablu ha'am, kihika Hashem ba'am makad gedola. And the people mourned because HaKadosh Baruch Hu, created this great plague here, where all of a sudden all these people died. The Targum Yonasan understands that what's the 70 and the 50,000? So he says that Hashem killed 70 of the elders of Beit Shemesh, okay, plus 50,000 regular people. So 70 elders plus 50,000 regular people, okay? Now, you think about this, this is unbelievable, right? This is mind-boggling. All of a sudden they get the Aron back. They're so overjoyed that they got the Aron, and boom, HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings a plague that just kills on the spot, 50,000 people, almost 50,000, almost 100, right? 50,000 and 70 people. That's a lot of people. That's a lot of people to die because of this. Now, Chazal understand that it's not exactly, Chazal say it doesn't really mean, it turned two interpretations in Chazal. One is that Hashem really killed only 70 people. But each one of these people was equivalent to 50,000. These were the greats. These were the elders, the chachamim, the sages, the gedolim. Right? So he killed 70 of these gedolim But each gadol was the equivalent of 50,000 regular people. That's one interpretation. So really only 70 people died according to that interpretation. There's another interpretation that says that he really killed 50,000, but each one of these 50,000 was also great as one of the 70 members of the Sanhedrin. So either way, it's indicating, according to Chazal, that the people who died were great people. Either only 70 people died, but they were each the equivalent of 50,000, or 50,000 people died, but each one was the equivalent of one of the 70 members of the Sanhedrin. Either way, it is something that, the chash of a people, the gedolim, the sages, the tamidi chachamim, died as a result of this. The Alshech points out here in the Pasuk that the Pasuk says Vayach twice. Vayach b'anshe b'es shemesh ki rabba aron Hashem, and then again Vayach ba'am shivimish. So what's the Vayach, Vayach? So he says, the Alshech says that first the elders looked, and because of that they were punished. And after the elders looked, then the people looked, and then they were punished. That's why it says Vayach twice. Now it's interesting, because normally you say that the people should follow the elders, right? You know, if the Gedolim are doing something, you should follow the Chacham and follow the elders. But here you have a situation, according to the Alshech, where the people followed the elders, but the elders were doing something wrong. And the elders did something wrong, the people followed them, and both the elders and the people were punished because of what they did. Okay.
But how can you blame the people if they're following the elders? How would they know that it's wrong?
Good question, right? How do you blame the people if they're following the elders? The people are told they're supposed to follow the elders. That's a good question. So the only answer, it would seem, is to say that this was something that the people should have realized was wrong, and that if the elders were doing it, maybe they were doing it inappropriately, and it was something that's wrong. Again, this is hard to understand. Right? This whole story is hard to understand because, why are they doing this? If it's wrong, they were looking into the Arun, if that's not the right thing to do, why were the elders doing it? So maybe they were doing it because they were so excited, they hadn't seen the Arun in such a long time, and here they were overcome with joy and excitement that finally, Baruch Hashem, the Arun was returned, and they just went a little too far in their joy. But it's a difficult story to understand. The Malbim understands that it wasn't everyone, from Beit Shemesh. That he understands that maybe the 70 were people from Beit Shemesh, and then the 50,000 were others that had gathered, that once the word got out that the Aron returned, so now people from all over the countryside gathered to see it, and they also sinned. So the 70 from Beit Shemesh were killed, and then the 50,000 others were killed as well. Now, what exactly was this sin? Okay, so again, one interpretation that we saw, the Radak says, Pashup Shah, they opened the Aron and they looked into it. So one thing you see is that, curiosity is not always a good midah, right? Curiosity sometimes is good. And here, presumably, they wanted to see, a lot of these people maybe had never been so, up close to the Aron. Imagine, the Aron was always kept in the Mishkan. In the Midbar, it was always protected by the Kohanim and the Levian. It could be your average Joe, no offense, Joe. But it could be your average Joe, never got too close to the Aron, and all of a sudden he's cutting his wheat and he looks up and he sees the Aron. He sees the Aron Hashem, the Aron that was in the Mishkan. I mean, that's like amazing. So you imagine the scene, some sort of artifact just like plops down, next to my backyard. Chances are most people are going to go run and see what's going on, right? So all of a sudden they have the opportunity to see the Aron. They've never seen it before. So they're going to run and they're going to check it out and they're going to open it up and look inside and see what it is. And that's curiosity. Curiosity isn't always a good midah, right? What do they say? Curiosity killed the cat, right? It's not always a good midah. There are times that curiosity is good. Certainly in terms of spirituality and uncovering things and understanding things, curiosity is great. But sometimes curiosity is not so good. We don't always have to know everything. We don't always have to understand everything. And certainly when it comes to areas of Kedusha, like here we're talking about the Aron, sometimes recognizing that there's a barrier, recognizing that there's a border, a line that I shouldn't cross, that's an important thing to recognize. Now, the Radak quotes another interpretation from Chazal, which I also found to be fascinating. And he says that if you go back to that Pasuk Yudalid, which described the people when the Aron arrived, so what does the Pasuk say? Yud Gimel. So the pasuk says, "Uveshemesh kotzrim kitzirchitim ba'emek, vayisu esenem vayirus aron vayisnu chuliros." So says the Radak, based on that pasuk, that maybe the people were doing their work. They were cutting their wheat. All of a sudden, they look up and they see the aron. So what do? What they should have done, says the Radak, and he quotes Chazal here. What they should have done is they should have dropped what they were doing and run to go see to go greet the aron, not to touch it, not to look inside, but to go greet the aron. But what did they do? Instead, they kept working. They kept cutting. Right? They're in the middle of their workday. So they kept working, they kept cutting. Now, as they see, all the aron's here, you know, they saw, maybe they bowed down to it, they showed some respect, but they didn't miss a beat. They kept cutting the wheat. They kept going, you know, they kept doing what they were supposed to be doing. They didn't stop their work because of the aron.
So says, this sounds like just the opposite of what we said before, though. Before we said that they were too excited.
Yes.
That they were
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Very good. Good point. But it is almost exactly the opposite. And according to this, according to the Radak, here, you know, they should have accorded the aron more respect. They should have paid more attention and focused more on the aron. And here, they didn't. You know, they're kind of like, we'll multitask. Right, we'll multitask. You know, we'll keep cutting our wheat, and we'll also bow to the aron as well. You know, we'll keep doing what we're doing, and you know, and we'll also do that. You know, what came to mind is, you know, unfortunately, there's a halacha that a person is not allowed to do a malacha while they're making a bracha, right? So, and sometimes we just naturally, you know, fall into this. We're making a bracha. As we're making the bracha, you know, we're cutting something. We're doing something. As we're making the bracha, the halacha is we can't do that. Right, a person not allowed to be doing anything when they're making a bracha. They have to just stop and focus on the bracha. You can't be cutting, wiping, cleaning. You know. Sometimes, unfortunately, we're benching, and as we're benching, you know, we're kind of clearing the table and you know moving things around as we're benching. Right, that's not the right thing to do. We have to be focusing on what we're doing. We can't multitask as we're coming to talk to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You know, unfortunately, sometimes people in shul. Right, we sometimes get sidetracked. You know, we're davening, and we're also, we're motioning to someone or hinting to someone, you know, as we're davening. Sometimes we're davening and we're checking our phone, you know, at the same time. It's not the right thing to do. You know, when we daven, when we're focusing on the Ribono Shel Olam, whether it's brachos, whether it's tefillah, we have to be 100% focused. We have to focus on what we're doing, complete attention to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and not get sidetracked by our phones, by other things that are going on. By other people that are there, by other things that are going on at the table or in the kitchen or what have you. We have to be completely focused and give our full attention. And that, according to Chazal, was the sin of these people, that they recognized the aron. Maybe they even bowed when the aron came by. But they were multitasking. They kept doing their work. You know, they just accorded some honor, but they kept doing their work.
Rabbi, another thing wrong was that during the 7 months that the Philistines had the ark, the Jews did nothing to try and get it back.
Right. Very good. So we pointed that out actually a couple of weeks ago. I don't remember the context now, but one of the Mefarshim points that out. Maybe now, I'm thinking maybe it was the Alshech. One of the Mefarshim points that out, that this whole time we don't find, you know, that the Jews bent over backwards. You know, they should have bent over backwards. They should have gone crazy to get the Aron back, you know, send in the special forces to get the aron back, and we don't find that they did that. Very good. The Malbim has one last interpretation, which is very interesting here, and also, you know, the Harry picked up on the Beis, right? That it says here, ki ra'u ba'aron Hashem. So Harry's diuk in the Beis was that maybe that's the indication that they looked inside the aron, which is very nice. The Malbim has a little bit of a different take, and the Malbim says that whenever in Tanakh you find the shoresh of ra'a, resh aleph hey, followed by a base, like in this case, Ra'u Ba'aron Hashem, and he brings, of course, you know, Kedarko, like his normal way, he brings many psukim to bolster his point. So that means that a person is thinking about the essence of something. They're thinking to try to understand the real essence of whatever it is that they're encountering. And says the Malbim, and this is a whole different interpretation of what the sin was, but that the people, when they saw the Aron, they were ra'u ba'aron Hashem. They tried to really wrap their heads around the aron. They tried to really understand the essence and the deep meaning behind the aron. And according to the Malbim, they went a little bit too far. Because to a certain degree, we have to recognize, and this is part of the honor and the awe that we have to give to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to the, you know, to the Beis HaMikdash and the Mishkan and the Kelim, that there are certain things that we're going to understand, and then there are certain things that we're not going to understand. And by definition, sometimes the more we dig and the more we dig and the more we try to understand, and you know because we got to figure it out, we got to understand it. If we can't understand it, then it can't be true. You know, if we can't wrap our heads around it, then we can't believe it. That itself is a lack of kavod. That itself is a lack of awe, is a lack of yira for HaKadosh Baruch Hu and for the Kelim. Here, to a certain extent, you know, we can't quite wrap our heads around the Aron. We can't quite wrap our heads, but we can't quite understand exactly what the Aron is and what it represents and what all the different elements of it. Again, certain things we can understand, but they were trying a little bit too hard. They were trying to say, you know, we can do this. We can understand it. We can wrap our heads around it. We can get it. And in a sense, that's a lack of kavod, and that's a lack of yira. And this is an important point, I think, also. And this is a tough point. You know, you have to try to toe the line. It's not so easy here. But to try to toe the line where, you know, to an extent, we believe in Nasa Vinishma, which means, well, of course, we have to do. But Vinishma, right, we're allowed to understand it. We're allowed to try to understand as much as we can and try to wrap our heads around things. But at the same time, there comes a point where we say, okay, we understand as much as we understand, and that's it. And the rest we're makabel. The rest we accept. The rest we, you know, we leave up to God, and we believe that there's some sort of greater wisdom, greater chachma here. We don't quite understand it 100%, but we believe it and we trust it, and that's the honor and the awe that we give to the Ribbono Shalom, that we give to the Mishkan, that we give to all the holy things, that we give to the Torah. And perhaps here, according to the Malbim, maybe they crossed that line. Maybe they went a little bit too far and tried to almost humanize the Aron and humanize the Mikdash, the Mishkan, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when in reality, of course, to a certain degree, this is beyond our understanding. The Mishkan, the Aron, Hashem are beyond our understanding, and we can't quite wrap our heads around them. Okay, so these are all the different interpretations as to what exactly the sin was and why the sin happened. Let's go to Pasuk Chaf. Vayomru Anshei Beis Shemesh. So now the people of Beit Shemesh, they see what happened, right? All these people died. Again, whether it was 70 people, 50,000 people, whatever it was, but a large amount of people died. The people who died, Chazal tell us, were chashuvim. They were chashuvim people. They were significant people, important people. And now the rest of the remaining of the survivors, the people of Beit Shemesh, they say, Miyuchal lamo lifnei Hashem ha'elokim ha'kadosh hazeh. Right? How can we possibly stand it? You know, if the elders were killed, if it says the Mitzudas David, if our Gedolim just died as a result of this Aron, right? We don't stand a chance. How are we going to do it? How are we going to stand up, you know, before HaKadosh Baruch Hu and protect this Aron? Ve'el mi yale me'aleinu, right? Who among us is going to be able to guard the Kedusha of the Aron properly? That's how the Mitzudas David understands the Pasuk. Malbim says that they weren't sure exactly, the people here were not sure exactly what the problem was. Meaning they understood that Hashem was upset and a lot of people just died in a plague because Hashem was upset. But they weren't sure what was the reason for the plague. Was the reason for the plague because we did not prepare ourselves properly? We didn't sanctify ourselves properly? That's miyuchal lamo lifnei Hashem Elokim HaKadosh Hazeh. Right? Maybe we didn't sanctify ourselves properly. And if that's the case, who can? Who has the ability to sanctify themselves properly? But then alternatively, they weren't sure that maybe it wasn't them, but maybe it was the location. Maybe the fact that they kept the Aron there, maybe they should have moved the Aron right away, you know, back to Shiloh, back to the Mishkan, to a place that was more appropriate. Here they kept it there. They took it off the wagon, they put it on this rock, and they kind of kept it there, right? Maybe that was the problem. And he says, "Ve'el mi yale me'aleinu," he says, that's the understanding of, you know, maybe this was the location, maybe the place here was the problem. Either way, you know, whichever way we understand it, but you see again the importance of, number one, sanctifying ourselves before we're involved in something, right? Before we're involved in something holy, to sanctify ourselves. You know, the Hasidim have a nice minhag that many of the Litvish, you know, are against. But the Hasidim say, you know, they have a l'shem yichud. That before all the mitzvahs that they do, they have this paragraph that they recite, l'shem yichud kutshabricho tshchinte, right, which essentially talks about all these Kabbalistic ideas. But the bottom line, the basis of what they're doing is that they're trying to prepare themselves for doing the mitzvah. The Litvaks, so, you know, the Nodeb Yehuda and others, other poskim were against this paragraph because they said, you know, we're talking about all these Kabbalistic ideas. We have no idea what we're talking about. Better not to say this, l'shem yichud. And that's why the Nodeb Yehuda and others were against it. And that's why many in the more Litvish community don't say the l'shem yichud. But everyone agrees, Hasidim and Litvaks together, everyone agrees that to mentally and spiritually prepare yourself before becoming involved in a mitzvah, before becoming involved in something that's holy and something that's kadosh, that's a must. That's a necessity. And unfortunately, so often, you know, we don't do it. We run into the mitzvah. We run into whatever we're doing. You know, we're always running into shul, myself included, right? I'm talking to myself. We're running into shul. We're not thinking and preparing. I remember at one point in my life, you know, maybe I read something in the, you know, something like this in the Shulchan Aruch, and I would stop for a second before I walked into a shul. You know, you stop and you think for your, you know, for a second, like, what am I doing? What am I going into? I'm about to enter into a Beis Knesset. I'm about to enter into a Beis Medrash. I'm about to study Torah. I'm about to learn. I'm about to daven. Whatever I'm about to do, but just to mentally and spiritually prepare ourselves for a minute. As we know, the Gemara tells us, famous Gemara in Brachos, that the Hasidim Arishonim used to prepare themselves for an hour before they daven. Okay, so we're not holding, certainly at that Madriga, we're not even holding it by the Hasidim Achronim. You know, forget an hour. We can't even prepare ourselves for 5 minutes. You know, but 30 seconds. You know, 30 seconds, sometimes just to collect our thoughts, you know, before we come to, before we start davening. I once told this story, maybe in one of the voice notes that I left over, when shul was closed over COVID. But someone once came to Shlomo Zalman Orbach, and they asked him, they said, you know, I usually get to davening a few minutes early. What should I learn? You know, I have a few minutes. Should I learn Tanakh? Should I learn Gemara? Should I learn Mishnah? What should I learn? Musar? So Shlomo Zalman Orbach said, learn? He said, you get to davening a few minutes early? He said, don't learn anything. He said, just sit there and prepare yourself for davening, right? We're not talking about you got there for a half hour early. You got there a few minutes early. Rav Shlomo Zalman said, what do you mean learn? Sit and prepare yourself. Sit and focus. Sit and mentally and spiritually prepare yourself for what you're about to do. You know, so sometimes we need just 10 seconds, you know, 30 seconds just to focus our minds and recognize, you know, the holiness that we're about to engage in, this, the, you know, the tefillah, Torah, whatever the case might be. They didn't do that. These people didn't do that. And according to the Malbim, perhaps that was one of the problems. And also, of course, the importance of the sanctity of location. That if that was their concern, that this wasn't the appropriate location, how careful we have to be with the locations that are appropriate, right? With our shuls and with our Batei Medrash. I think there are so many lessons, you know, in this parak about shuls and Batei Medrash and yeshivas, you know, how we have to treat these places. You know, when the location is appropriate, when it is a holy place, whether it's a shul or a Beis Medrash, how we have to treat it and how we have to accord it the proper honor and respect and reverence. And then finally, the last pasuk Chaf Aleph, Vayishluchu Malachim El Yoshvei Kiryasi Arim Leimor. So the people of Beit Shemesh have had enough. So they send messengers to another neighboring city, Kiryasi Arim. They send messengers to that city to say, Hey Shivu Plishtim Es Aron Hashem. The Plishtim have returned the Aron Hashem. Redu Hey Alu Oso Aleichem. Come down and take it and bring it to you. You know, because we're not capable of maintaining the proper kedusha here. We're not capable of watching it, and therefore, you know, please come and take it and take care of it and treat it with the proper respect. They did want to keep it close. The Malbim points out that Beit Shemesh. He points out there were two Beit Shemesh, and this was the Beit Shemesh that was in Shevet Yehuda. He said there's another one in Shevet Yisachar. Kiryas Yearim was also in Shevet Yehuda. So both of these cities were in the same Shevet. And he says that Kiryas Yearim is along the border between Yehuda and Binyamin. And according to the Malbim, the people of Beit Shemesh knew that they were not qualified to hold on to the Aron and to guard it properly, but they wanted to keep it nearby. They wanted to keep it in their Shevet. Once the Aron came to Shevet Yehuda, they wanted to keep it in Shevet Yehuda. And that's why they reached out to Kiryas Yearim. They also wanted to put the people at ease because they didn't want the people of Kiryas Yearim to get nervous and think, well, if the Plishtim came and took it once, then maybe they're going to come and take it again. So therefore he says, no, you know, he puts them at ease and says, the Plishtim returned this on their own. Heshivu Plishtim es Aron Hashem. We didn't capture it back. It's not like we captured it and now the Plishtim are going to go and recapture it. That's not what happened. The Plishtim returned it on their own. So you really don't have to be afraid the Plishtim are going to come get it. But we're not qualified to watch it, so we want you to come take it and watch it with the proper respect and the proper reverence. And again, we see that sometimes, you know, you need to call the right people to treat the things with respect. So I think a lot of lessons, important lessons here in how we treat Devarim Shebekdusha, how we treat shuls and Batei Medrash and things like that. You know, a lot of lessons that we see from this parak. Okay.